Rishus, Rabbi Kunstler, and the Rebbein. So we want to speak a little bit, obviously, about Yom HaDin is coming up, Yom Kippur is coming up. So we want to speak a little bit about more, not as much tshuva, much as getting a somewhat of a focus that we use this period of the year as some sort of vehicle for growth, not only in the year, not only right now, not only in the year, but as some sort of yisod for a lifetime. Before I start, I just want to show you, this is a new book. It is called Fundamentals of Public Speaking. I don't know if you've seen this, but the Fundamentals of Public Speaking. I brought a few copies here. If any of you are interested, they're 20 shekels each. I'll leave some here afterwards. You can pay Rabbi Kunstler. I'll leave some around. They're 20 shekels. Just if you're going to be teaching or speaking, whatever it is, so it could be very helpful. And but I don't. There should be no pressure. No pressure. I hopefully will find some other way to support my children. Don't worry about it. There was a Rosh Yeshiva told me he was once sitting on a plane. Rosh Chodesh El. They're turning on the air conditioning.
Yes.
Okay. There was Rosh Yeshiva was sitting on a plane. It was Rosh Chodesh El. And everybody was sleeping on the plane. And it's one of those night flights. So they're coming towards, it's dark in the plane, everybody's sleeping, quiet, 4 a.m. One young man on the plane got up to daven shacharis. And after he finished davening shacharis, he decided that, minig Yisrael Torah. So he decided, minig's a minig. So he finished davening shacharis, pulled out a shofar, and he blew a tkiah on the plane, on a quiet, sleeping plane. People fall asleep on the plane. Now, can you imagine the people waking up on that plane, which is a kium of the pasuk Uru Yeshenim Yeshenastan, awake you slumberers, right? Nowadays, if you ever want to laugh, just picture the face of the people on the plane as you're sitting on a quiet plane and all of a sudden you hear a tekiah shofar on the plane. So Lamaisa, he's got the right attitude. The attitude is that there's a certain point in the year where a person says, okay, we go through our routine, and when we're in the routine, we have to a certain extent, we're caught in that routine, and at a certain point, the person says, I would like to break out of it a little bit. That's what this season is about. It's not as much about the people often look at it as, I sinned, I don't want to burn, don't smack too hard, I hope I get, I want to live. That's certainly one aspect of it. But more than that, a person should make use of this period of the year. Imagine the following. Imagine a guy. Guy set the world record for a high jump. Imagine, guys, the world record. I don't know what's the high jump record now, about 8 feet. I don't know what the record, 8 feet, 9 feet, whatever it is, the high jump record. Okay, I'm going to say 8 feet. The guy set the world record. And then 20 years later, he's attending the Olympics. And at the Olympics, he's standing there, and he watches at the Olympics, and he sees that there's the high jump event. So the guy announces, the loudspeaker announces, we have with us as a guest, Plony, who is the world record holder for the high jump. Plony, who's the high jump world record holder, is here with us today. So the guy turns to his friend and says, high jump, I'm the high jump record holder. I can't even jump in the bed. I can't, I'm the high, his friend says to him, yeah. 20 years ago, when you were focused, when you were in perfect training, you had a goal, you knew what you wanted to achieve, you had a coach, you were properly nutritionized, and everything you were doing was focused towards a goal, you were able to clear it 8 feet. And you're still the world. No one's ever beaten that record. What happens to us in the course of the year in Yiddishkeit? Yiddishkeit is a series of steps. It's 3 steps forward, 2 steps back. We, in the course of the year, we have our ups and downs, and then we hit Elul. Elul comes along, and when Elul comes along, we get really focused. Then Aser Yemei Teshuva, then Yom Kippur. And once we hit Yom Kippur, we push ourselves to a certain height. Then during the course of the year, it's going to drop. You're not going to maintain that intensity the rest of the year. It's not going to happen. You're going to go 3 steps forward, 2 steps back. But the next year, you're going to come to Elul just a little higher than you are at this year's Elul. And then the year after that, it's going to be even higher. And eventually, your lowest low in the course of the year is going to be higher than your highest high right now in Ni'ilat Yom Kippur of this year. So the focus, a person has to know, number one, I have to get focused. I have to get focused. I have to know where I'm going. Years ago, when I got married, my wife is from Columbus, Ohio. It's not my fault. That's where she's from. And I'm from Chicago. It's a real city. And all sorts of champions. And so we had to leave. We had to drive from Chicago to Columbus. And it's about a seven-hour drive. If they had I-70, it's about a seven-hour drive. They had to go from Chicago to Columbus. Now, when you leave Chicago, Chicago's here, Columbus is here. My father, the Columbus Rough, they gave me instructions. We leave Chicago, there are about 16 lanes leaving the city, and you got to catch, and, you know, he started giving me instructions. You got to get into the third lane from the right, and then quickly get to the sixth one from the left, and then you got to switch over and get in. And I'm listening and listening. He said, "You got it?" I said, "Yeah." We both knew I didn't. Okay. So my wife and I get in the car. He's driving a Camaro. It's a nice car. And we get in. We had all of our earthly belongings. And we start driving. Leave Chicago. We hit that, you know, those 16 lanes. And I had that sinking feeling. And I don't think I got this right. But, you know, we're young. We're just married. Married for a week or two. Said, "All right, big deal. We'll drive." Start driving. And after about an hour, hour and a half, it's about close to midnight, I see a sign that says Detroit, 235 miles. And that's bad. Because Chicago is here, Columbus is here, Detroit's here. Right? And Detroit is bad for other reasons, too. There was nothing that I wanted in Detroit. They're bad in sports, bad in other things. Whatever it was, there's nothing that I wanted in Detroit. And so we pulled off the road. Now, we're at a truck stop at midnight off some lonely highway road in Chicago. I can't come into this truck stop. I remember there's a lady behind the counter. You can imagine what she was like working in a truck stop at midnight. And I come in, I say, "Hi, can you tell me how to get to Columbus?" So she goes, "Well, just a second." She yells, "Roy!" And Roy comes out. He's a trucker. He looks like he stepped right off the cover of Truckers Illustrated. The guy's got, you know, the mutton chop sideburns. He's got a beer in one hand, another beer in the second, and a third beer in his mouth. You know, Roy comes out. And Roy, he puts his foot up. She says, "Roy, can you tell this guy how to get to Columbus? So he looks at me and goes, "Well, where are you coming from?" So I said, "Chicago." "See, Chicago. Boy, are you messed up." Right? And he started laughing. He called all the other truckers. "Hey, Roy." They're all named Roy, by the way. "Roy's." "Roy." And these guys come in. And they come in. They're having a great laugh. And I didn't find anything amusing about it. And I remember Roy. But I took one. Roy gave me a good piece of Musser for life. Roy gave me a good piece of Musser. You better know where you're going. And you better know how to get there. So when we're trying to achieve something in life. We're trying to achieve something in life. So you have to have a certain focus. So we come to this point of the year. What are we trying to do? So, first of all, I'll tell you where there are certain areas where we need to improve, and then we'll try to see what we can do with that as far as the mahalach. When you were growing up, there was probably somebody on your block. I imagine that there was somebody on your block who you would call accident prone, right? Because I was that one kid who was accident prone. His name is usually Rafi. And he's accident prone, right? And this is a kid. I don't know why they did. Statistically, that's it. Maybe it's Rafael. I'm not sure. Whatever it is. He was the kid who was always walking around with either a splint or stitches or what do you call it? Or he had some sort of bandage. You never saw his clothing. There was always some add-on white tape somewhere on his body. And he was accident prone. Okay, why was he accident prone? And so it's an amazing thing. The guy who was the masvid who used to sit in the base medrash, for some reason, he was never accident prone. Ever noticed that? Once in a while, he strained his elbow picking up a baba basra, but that was about it. The Rafi was always limping, splinting, stitching something. Why? Because he was never on the ground. He jumped from table to table, swung on chandeliers. He was always the first guy to test whether or not the rope is strong. So Rafi was always the guy. Rafi is always, they say, you're a redneck. If the last thing he ever said was, "Hey, y'all, watch this." So, Rafi was our version. Okay, so Jewish red, we didn't do that. At the end of the day, he was accident prone. So, tell you a halachic shaila. There were two ladies from England, two ladies from London, who went through a traumatic experience. Maybe that was it, just being from London. But they went through a traumatic experience. They were in some sort of car accident. And the doctor said they have to go for 10 days of rest and relaxation. They were traumatized. They have to go. So they rented a chalet somewhere in Switzerland. Just the two of them out in the Swiss Alps somewhere by themselves. No contact with their family. Once a day, pick up the phone. "Hi, everything okay?" "Yeah, good." And that's it. 10 days of total separation. All right. After 10 days, they go to the airport to go back to England. They get to the airport. The lady at the counter says to them, "Sorry, you can't get on the plane." "Why not?" "It's because your tickets are for Tuesday and today is Wednesday." They were so relaxed, that they actually lost track of time. They were so relaxed, they lost track and they lost the full day. A woman's delight, a woman's dream. She lost track of time. It's a husband's delight also. She stayed an extra day, but he can't say. So she's, what do you call it? The two of them are, you know, she's what do you call it? They start giggling. Wow, that was unbelievable. That was so relaxing. And then one of them starts, she goes, oh no, oh no, oh no. She says, what's wrong? She says, well, if today is Wednesday, that means that we cooked and cleaned all day Shabbos lechod Sunday. So they think back to themselves, like that, and sure enough, they lost track of time. They thought Shabbos was Friday. All day Shabbos they were cooking and cleaning, and they were over on hundreds, if not thousands, of Isuri Doraisa. So they sent somebody to Rabbi Yashiv Zatzal to ask Rabbi Yashiv, how do you do tshuva? I made a bracha before. How do you do tshuva? So Rabbi Yashiv said, listen, they can't fast, they can't do anything like that. What they should do is they should get a, start a Hilchos Shabbos class, or sort of do something a little more, learn Hilchos Shabbos, whatever it is. But I have a different question. Why did it happen to them? Why did it happen to them? There's some people that would never happen to. There's some people that always happens to. There are people who I call halachically accident prone. Just like there are people who are physically accident, people who are halachically accident prone. They're always the same people with those shilas. There's the same people, they're always the people who they left Flatbush to get to Muncie, and they got stuck in a blizzard in upstate New York, right? They were stuck there all day. Sure, they got stuck. They left 15 minutes before Shabbos to make a 2-hour trip, so you're going to get stuck. Or you got the people who always, the airport, the plane came in and flew into the airport, and you get one of these heartwarming stories. Everybody brought food to the airport because all the Jews are stuck in the airport. Yeah, but if you got on the plane knowing that your plane's landing 20 minutes before Shabbos, so you know you're going to get stuck in the airport. That means the person doesn't care. There's a certain flippancy. He relates to the halacha with a certain, it just isn't, we'll take our chance, we'll risk it. There's certain homes you go into. Shomer Shabbos home. In the course of Shabbos, the bathroom light is always going on and off in an entire Shabbos. It's never the same. You walk in, that's on, off. On. The whole Shabbos, all you hear is people walking into the bathroom, oops, and then once in a while you get a double oops. Oops, oops, and you get the guy who's really traumatized. Oops, 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 oops. Chatas, 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 chatas. Why does it happen? In some homes, it would never happen. So the guy's Ursameh, Bali Chuba, said, come on, Rabbi, be real. You can't possibly get through a Shabbos without, how can you possibly get through a Shabbos without turning on a light switch? I said to the guys, I'm sure every single one of you could get through the next Shabbos without flicking a light switch. I guarantee you. You know how I know? Because if I give you $100 to get through the next Shabbos without flicking a light switch, you'd succeed. You would either tape down every light switch in the house, or you would tape your arms to your sides, or you would sabotage the electric supply of the city. But one way, for $100, you'll do it, right? There's no question about it. And you're Jewish. And therefore, for a person, if you're motivated enough, if you're strongly motivated enough about the halacha, so you care. If you don't care, it happens. But if you're motivated, I want to tell you something. When I was about 19, my father, Zichrono Livracha, he took me out to learn how to drive a stick shift. We owned a Pinto. There's a Ford Pinto. It was a nice little car, beautiful little car. He had one problem. Once in a while, it got hit in the back and exploded. So they recalled, but all the Jews had them because they were cheap. So they, it's the price you pay. So he took me out to a big parking lot to learn how to drive a stick shift. I was 19 years old. So I was there for about 20 minutes. I couldn't get it. The car kept dying. I could not coordinate, releasing the pedal and pushing. It kept dying. Okay. I said, Dad, forget it. I'll drive the automatic. He says, come on, plenty of people in the world drive stick shifts. You can learn. Keep trying. I tried for another 10 minutes. I still couldn't do it. And I was really frustrated. I was upset with myself. I said, Dad, forget it. I'll drive the automatic. So my father, Zichrono Livracha, was a very, very wise man. So he just sat there and he let me stew for about a minute or two. He didn't say anything. I'm just sitting in the car and I'm really upset. And all of a sudden he looks at me and goes, Mom knows how to drive it. And that was it. 30 seconds later, I was the best stick driver in the city. Wheelies, spins, anything that you want. Why? There was simply no way that my mother was going to drive a vehicle that I couldn't. It just was not going to happen. I just needed a little bit of motivation. If a person understands what halacha is, they had a guy here in Israel. Father took his four kids on a teal up north. Boiling hot summer day, Ben Azmanin. He takes his kids on a teal up north. And at a certain point, they get on a bus to go back to Yerushalayim. It's about a 2.5-hour trip. They get on the bus is packed. In the old days, you could stand on the buses. So father gets on with four kids. They're cranky, he's cranky, Clystro's cranky. And now they got to go 2.5 hours on a bus. So he doesn't know what to do. So he pulls out his phone. He gets a brilliant idea. He pulls out his cell phone. He says, yeah, the doctor said two of them have Mexican flu for sure, and two of them might have Mexican flu. Right? The bus stopped 10 minutes later. Half the bus cleared off. Right? Great. Now you can sit on the seats to lie down on. What a beautiful trip. Comes back to Yerushalayim. And there's a Shaila, came to Zilberstein. He'll come back to Yerushalayim. And he goes to the Rav. He says, listen, Libi Nokfi, I feel bad. I think I was over on Geneva's Das. That's what happened. He tells him the story. He says, that's not Geneva's Das. That's Gezel Gomor Del Raisa. You stole from those people. You forced those people off the bus. That was your plan. Every one of them then had to buy another ticket to get to Yerushalayim, which they wouldn't have bought. You were stealing. You stole from the rabbin. The only way you could even do a minimal amount of tshuva is to do tzorchei rabbin, and even that isn't 100% tshuva. And you're never going to... That's the sort of thing you... In one moment, you messed up. Why? A person who cares about the halakha, where halakha means something. Sometimes, it's a hilchus brachas, for example. You know, I think I did a shinui makom. I didn't do a shinui makom. Some people just get up at the beginning of the day, bore priha food. That'll take care of it for the day. Looks like a mazonos. I guess I'll make an alamichia. Especially if there's something of benching. I'd much rather make the shorter one. We kind of posken these things for ourselves. If a person cares, the person finds out what the halakha is. I just take it, grab it. I'm not sure. Well, that's not what the halakha means by itself. A person has to be mevarek. If a person cares, Person doesn't care. You get the people who are never making mistakes. You get the people. There's always the guy who comes up. What do? I forgot to say Yalav Yavo. Well, you got to repeat your one. I say, yeah, but it's my third time that I forgot it. Third time in a row. Or the guy says, yeah, I was in the middle of davening, and I was about to say, Bonei Yerushalayim. I was about to say, what do you call it? Atachonin Lodam Das, and I ended up with saying Bori Priha Eitz instead, in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. I don't know what to tell you. Take a bite out of your own head. You got an apple up there. Some people it's always happening to, some people never happens. The answer is, do you care? Are you motivated? Does it mean something to you? Number one. They had a Maisa here in Eretz Yisrael. You guys have been in Israel. How long have you been? You just got here. You got here. Elo. Most of you, is this new group? Elo. Okay, so you've seen. Somebody once said, the best uptight you ever heard of Eretz Yisrael. Somebody once said, nothing in Israel is real. Nothing here is real. The money is not real. Money is monopoly money. Money is not real. The politics is anything but real. They had a guy once, in the true story, the Kinneret is the main body of water in Israel. We have a red line in the Kinneret, which is the danger level. So we had about 5 years of drought. And the Kinneret dropped to about 10 centimeters above the red line. They had the Minister of Agriculture on a live broadcast on the radio. And the guy said to him, sir, what are you going to do if the Kinneret hits the red line? He said, it's not a problem. We will erase the red line and draw it lower. Right? He actually said that. And then if you've been living in a country, if you've been living here for a while, where you just hear that and you go, oh, okay, all right, that's fine, okay. We're used to that sort of thing. Right? That's not real. I'm sorry, that's not real. The driving here is not real. If a bus could drive up on a sidewalk and honk you out of the way, that is not real. The addressing system in this country is science fiction. It's not real at all. Now, here's building 41, and right next to it is 17A. Exactly what were you thinking here? Try walking around Sanhedrin Murcheva. See in a few years, boys. it's unbelievable. Nothing's real. Now, you feel like you're on a Hollywood set. We had Ursa Math. At Ursa Math, they had the Jerusalem light rail, which is neither light nor a rail, but the Jerusalem light rail runs about 50 yards from the entrance of Ursa Math. The track runs over there. And so the boys 1 year were burning their chametz right out there, Erev Pesach, they're burning their chametz right outside. The train is moving, stops, the conductor gets off the train and comes running over with a bag. He said, oh good, I was looking for a fire to burn my chametz. And he comes in, and everybody else is sitting on the bus. And you can imagine, if anybody on that bus, on the train, would say boo, can you imagine somebody saying, ma zeh, ma koreh, ma ata lo roeh, o tzech lishrof et hachametz, ma ita. And you're the villain for demanding a straight ride. So it's not real. There's only one thing that's real in Israel, the Ruchnias. The Ruchnias is real. You get a feeling, you get a sense, we're all on a Hollywood set here. And everywhere you go, there's a yeshiva, there's a kollel, there's another base medrash, there's somewhere to learn. It's all Ruchnias. It's all about Ruchnias here. So a lot of funny things happen in a Ruchni country. Right? Funny, ha-ha. But a lot of funny things happen, and it's all about Ruchnias. So a guy got on a bus in Bnei Brak. Also, a halachic shayla. The guy was getting on a bus in Bnei Brak to go to Yerushalayim. He had a suitcase with him, and he had to put his suitcase in the baggage compartment. So he goes to the baggage compartment, and the baggage compartment is stuffed with other suitcases. So to get leverage, he got into the baggage compartment, and for Shteytzach, the bus driver didn't see him, pushed a button, and closed him in the baggage compartment, and he drove from Bnei Brak to Yerushalayim with this guy inside. So the guy's banging on the bottom of the bus. Nobody hears him, gets to Yerushalayim. He's a little bruised up, but he's okay. He gets out of the bus, and he made a phone call. Who did he call? I called the Rav. He had to ask a shayla. I would have called a lawyer. He called the Rav. What's his shayla? Does he have to pay for the ride? Does he have to pay for the ride? Used to be that you could pay. You paid full fare if you were sitting, half fare if you were standing. Maybe there's a fare for lying down in the baggage compartment. Guy called the Rav. All right, parenthetically, what was the answer? It's a very interesting answer. What did the Rav say? He said, you don't have to pay. Why not? Because most normal people, that means above age 18, most normal people, if you offered them a free ride in the baggage compartment, they would turn it down. Right? If you offered me a free ride, I would turn it down. I would pay you not to put me in the baggage compartment. So you can't charge me for kidnapping me from your side. But the point is not the answer of this. The point is he asked the shayla. Why did he ask a shayla? He asked the shayla because he cared, because Allah means something. So he asked the shayla. If a person cares, if it means something to you, you ask. It's not just like, oh, well, yeah, I probably don't know. You walk into a supermarket, you touch a package on the way, once in a while you walk in, you see some wafers. In Israel, they have 100 different types of wafers, all of them the same. And you walk in, and you touch a bag of wafers, and boop, your thumb goes all the way through it. Oh, they must have been soft. Yeah, they were soft, and your thumb went right through. You quickly put it back on the shelf. That's like quickly speaking Lashon Hara. We all know that's okay. If you do it quickly, it's okay. It's not okay. You put your thumb through it, and you put it back on the shelf quickly. Now you may have to quickly pay for it. It's dinei mamonos. Maybe you're stealing. Maybe you have to pay for it. Knock something off the shelf. We paskin for ourselves. If you care, you'll ask. And by the way, it's a rule in life. If you don't want to ask, you probably shouldn't be doing it. You go to a hotel, and you help yourself as you leave the hotel to some soap, and some ketchup packets, and maybe the lamp, or whatever it is. Whatever it is that's not fastened down in the hotel. Well, they want me to have the towel. Yeah, they, it's good advertising for the hotel, right? I've heard that way. How exactly a towel from Holiday Inn hanging in your private shower and advertising for the hotel is not clear. So, you want to take some ketchup? Why don't you just go ask the guy? No, they don't care. They don't care. Why don't you ask it? If you don't want to ask them, you probably shouldn't be doing it. It's like cards, and if you belong to a health club, and it says not transferable, then your cousin is visiting from out of town. They want people to use the gym. They need the baskets to be used, otherwise they get rusty. Whatever the excuse, call them up, ask. Just find out. If you're afraid to ask, you probably shouldn't be doing it. You're talking about dinei mamonos. It's gezel. You're talking about dinei mamonos. This applies to all areas of halacha. Number one. By the way, that's not the only story. There was another girl. This was going on with two other cases of people who got stuck in baggage compartments. Be careful, guys, when you get on buses in Israel. Two other cases, a girl, 17-year-old girl, I think she was on a bus from Haifa to Yerushalayim. 17-year-old girl, she got stuck in the baggage compartment. That was one of those phone, but she had a phone with her. So she called her parents from the baggage compartment. Right? That was one of those, mom, dad, everything's okay, but, which all parents know means it is anything but okay. Right? If you ever call up and say, mom, dad, everything's okay, but that means you're basically alive and there are blue lights flashing around you. That's what it means. And parents don't want to, and of course they call the cops, and the cops stop the bus on the highway. I wasn't there. I'm sure I know how this story ends. I'm positive. I've been living here long enough. The bus comes, the cops stop them. Slicha, adoni, yesh bachura ba-bagaj. I'm sure the bus driver said, lo yechol yad, batuach shelo. Right? I'm sure he argued with them for 10 minutes. Right? Before I go, well, why over here? Can you please open it? And pushes the button, and she comes crawling out. Without a doubt, no question about it. So anyway, be careful on the buses. In any event, the first rule is you care. You care, you don't care. And if a person cares, you care about halacha. So we say Hashem Melech. We've been saying the whole time, Hashem Melech, Hashem Melech. You've been singing pretty songs, Hashem Melech, Hashem Melech. How do you make a kosher ruach of the Melech? How do you determine somebody's a Melech? You don't make a Melech by yelling out he's the Melech. You make a Melech by doing what the Melech said. And the first thing the Melech said is you have to obey my command. Yeah, but it's inconvenient. Yeah, but I don't want to pay. Yeah, but it's a lot of halachas to learn. But if you're saying Hashem Melech and you're being mamlich HaKadosh Baruch Hu, how are you mamlich him? You mamlich through your actions. And your actions are that you keep halacha. When I was growing up, there's a boxer, Muhammad Ali. I'm sure most of you probably have heard of him. I know I'm dating myself, but I'm sure you probably heard of him. And Muhammad Ali fought a guy named Kenny Norton for weeks. He was a great talker, and for weeks leading up to the fight, he was talking about what he's going to do to Kenny Norton. And then Kenny Norton broke his jaw and won the fight. Time Magazine, I was a little kid, I don't think I was doing bar mitzvah. Time Magazine had on the front cover a picture of Muhammad Ali's swollen jaw. And that was international news. It's like today, you get a country's threatening to bomb each other and nuke each other, but the major news is guys in the NFL who won't stand up for the Star-Spangled Banner, because that's really important. So I remember Time Magazine runs a picture of Muhammad Ali's swollen jaw on the front cover, and I remember the caption was on the biggest piece of Musser I ever heard since Roy the truck driver, right? The caption said, "The jaw is broken, but the mouth lives on." That means, what good is your talk if you're the one with a broken jaw on the canvas? First it says, Hashem Melech, Hashem Melech, Hashem Melech, Hashem Melech, oh good, Yom Kippur is over, let's go to town and do Aviras, Hashem Melech, Hashem Melech, we forgot only the first part, Hashem Melech, Hashem Melech, yeah, okay, we're going over, yeah, I know all about it, Hashem Melech, Hashem's Melech, Hashem's the Melech, yeah, he's your Melech, and he's their Melech, and he's everybody else's Melech. How is he the Melech? He's the Melech if you show he's the Melech. He's the Melech if you keep his word, he's the Melech if you do what you're told, and you don't do what you're told not to do. That's number one. Number two, the biggest command that we have in the Torah, obviously, is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. I heard some of the Bochum speaking before. I was very impressed. They talked about what they're learning. So when somebody's learning Sukkah, and he's got a fortune, they were very impressed. The guys are really insane into learning here. You've been very fortunate to have wonderful Rebbeim and a wonderful situation over here, where you have an opportunity to learn. What is the learning? The learning is the best thing you can possibly do. You want to show that Hashem is the Melech. You want to show Hashem is the Melech. You want to do tshuva. Let's do tshuva. Tshuva, tshuva. People are always analyzing. What is tshuva? Tshuva is this, tshuva is that. People are always analyzing tshuva. What does tshuva mean to do this? Or tshuva is this? How to? At the end of the day, you got to do tshuva. It's not enough to analyze it. Oh yeah, I analyze tshuva. Now you do it. No, it doesn't work that way. We have to do tshuva. How do you do tshuva? You recommit yourself to the Melech. How do you commit yourself to the Melech? Do what he wants. And do what he wants you to do most. The United States, some of you may remember, the United States, maybe 10 years ago, 50 years ago, I don't know exactly how long, there's a place called Virginia. Some of you may have heard of it. It's right near Columbus. And there's a place called Blacksburg, Virginia, and there's a little town called Blacksburg, Virginia. Now, Blacksburg, Virginia, I happened to be there because my uncle was a professor in Virginia Polytech University. We are talking as redneck America as you could get. It's a small redneck town with a very important physics university there, Virginia Polytech. In this university about 10 years ago, if you remember, a madman broke in and started shooting people. He ended up killing 32 students in the university. He wound up shooting up the university. That's the minhag ha'makom in America. He shot up the university. He killed 32 students. The record in America, by the way, is John Wayne Gacy, who is from Chicago. He killed 33, so another champion in Chicago. And he had 32. He killed 32 students in the university. And then he was trying to get into a room. There was an Israeli professor, a 70-year-old secular Israeli professor, who was blocking the door with his body. While he blocked the door, the students in the room all went out the windows. And eventually, the gunman broke down the door, and he shot this professor. This professor was a national hero. Professor was a national hero, got made the media. It was a kiddush Hashem. So from a woman said to me, it's true that he was a national hero. That's true. But so is every Jewish man, bacher, who is learning Torah, is a national hero. Because Chazal say, Godel Talmud Torah, Yoser Matzos Nefashos. Learning Torah is greater than saving lives. Somebody's drowning, you obviously have to stop, close the Gemara, and save him. Can't say tread water till I finish the Mishnah. Well, you can't do that. You have to finish this. You have to save the guy, but you also have to stop learning in order to say Kriya Shema. You have to stop learning to hear Megillah. You have to stop learning to pick up a lulav. But the greatest mitzvah is Talmud Torah. Godel Talmud Torah Yoser Matzos Nefashos. You know what that means? I'm going to put it to you in a shocking terms. Imagine that right now is 5 minutes before Yom Kippur, 10 minutes before Yom Kippur. Where are you usually at that point? Most people are by the sink. Everybody's at the sink. 10 minutes before Yom Kippur, 5 minutes before Yom Kippur, you know, you drink whatever the skula is in your family to make sure you're not getting thirsty. So you have 3 cups of water, 7 cups of water, 613 cups of water. You know, and then you know as well as I do that none of it matters because 5 minutes into Yom Kippur, kol nidrei, and you're... it's going to be a dry one this year. Yeah, every year's a dry one. Did you ever notice that? Then 10 minutes before Yom Kippur ends, you know, waiting to get to Mincha, you're like, oh boy, I think they're going to have to call Hatzalah. And there's a guy who skips breakfast every day, you know, and every day, all of a sudden at 10 in the morning, I don't know if I'm going to make it. You know, then once you get to Ne'ilah, you know, starting to feel a little bit more confident. You know, oh, Ne'ilah. You know, the banana barge that you're going to be doing after Yom Kippur, you're already picturing it on the horizon with those 4 slices of pizza wedged over and in. And so you got it all, you know, so things are looking a little good. Then, you know, they blow their last shofar. It's always, you know, Mincha takes an hour, Nila takes an hour, shofar blowing is 10 seconds, and Myra is less. And then Yom Kippur is over, and the first thought is often, you know, oh, well, I could probably fast tomorrow if I really wanted to. But nobody ever does, do they? Nobody ever does. Then you go out and you have a slice of pizza. You take 2 bites of pizza. And after your first slice, you're really basically okay. After your first slice, you're really basically okay, but I got a reputation to uphold. What am I going to tell my friends I only had 1 slice of pizza? You know, bring me 2 more pies. You know, I worked years to get this reputation. So a person understands 5 minutes before Yom Kippur. And you'd like to pick up the biggest schus you could possibly pick up. Now listen carefully. You're sitting by let's say you're by the mikveh. And you're learning. Why are you learning in the mikveh? I don't know. It's just emotional. And somebody's in the mikveh and he's drowning. Or you're by a lake and you're learning and he's drowning. Shnayim ochazim betala is gurgle, gurgle. All right, now. There are 2 possibilities here. You could save the guy, and there's somebody else who can and will save him as efficiently as you. He's sitting right next to the guy. He's just as close. You could save him, or you could allow the other guy to save him, and you could continue learning, and you're 100% sure that he will be saved by the other guy. What does the halacha say? You want the biggest schus you could possibly get going into Yom Kippur. What does the halacha say you should do? What is the Rambam Paskin? If it's a mitzvah, she'efshar ayidei acherim, you continue learning. So you're sitting there, and this guy's drowning, and your shnayim ochazim betala is ill, and you both start grabbing at the guy. No. You let him save, and you continue learning Torah. Because Godol Talmud Torah, yoser me'atzolos nefashos. You have a choice. You have a choice. So continue to learn Torah. Why should you go and stop learning? He's going to be saved. Again, it's an extreme example. But assuming that was the situation, that's what it should be. If a person wants to know, what could I be mischazik in, Rabbi Kunzer, what time, how much more time? Just 5 minutes? A person wants to know, a person's going into Yom Kippur, you want to be mischazik. Number one, you want to be mischazik in halacha. Number two, you want to be mischazik in Talmud Torah. Number three, there's a Maimer Chazal called Maver al Midos of Maver al Kopsho. Person who's willing to be Maver and his Midos, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu wipes the slate clean. Rabbeinu Yonah and Shari Tshuva says, you know, we go into Yom Kippur. At the end of the day, we're nervous. Listen, Rabbeinu Shalom, I know that I haven't been the perfect Boy Scout this year, and I'm a little nervous. What can I do, one thing, one area that I could be mischazik in, that'll give me the edge going into Yom Adin? Says Rabbeinu Yonah, kol ha-maver al-midosov, ma'avir lo al-kopshov. If you're willing to overlook, Chazal say, kol ha-maver al-midosov, if you're willing to overlook when somebody wrongs you, ma'avir lo al-kopshov, says Rabbeinu Yonah, v'zohi pesach tikva nechbad be'od. It's a glorious ray of hope. You want hope going into Yom Adin? You want some hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will overlook? We will overlook our wrongs, then we have to be willing to overlook. You know, you walk into shul, somebody sitting in your makom kavua. Right? So there are 3 types of people. When there's a makom kavua, 3 types of people. There's the first guy walks over, somebody's in your makom. You walk over, thumb them out at third base. Right? You're in my makom. Right? And of course, you're very makbid to daven in your makom because of the halacha. Right? Why you're coming in after Yishtavach is a good question. But you're so makbid on davening, you know, that on davening you're in your Dalad Amos. Okay. You have the second guy who's a tzaddik. Tzaddik is the guy, somebody says his mokom, he goes to all the way to the other side of the shul, covers his head with a towel, says he wants this guy to know that he might be in somebody else's place. Then you got the Beinoni. The Beinoni is the guy who paces back and forth six times like this. Just kind of stares at the guy. And the guy looks up and goes, oh, my mirror. No, sit. That's okay, sit. If I'm going to be a tzaddik, you're going to know about it. You know, none of this tzaddik for free business. So what's a Mavir Amidosa? A Mavir Amidosa, somebody's like, okay, he said, okay, so what? Yeah, you know why? Because it's me. It's mine. It's not the halacha. Halavai was the halacha. That's mine. And you are taking what's mine. So a Mavir Amidosa, I'm going to go up job. I've been in for a story. In the United States, there's a yeshiva. And one of the guys in the yeshiva started getting real frum. Like one of these, you know, washing a long time when there are a lot of people in line behind him. And every time somebody touched any part of their body or table or anything, oh, you got to wash your hand, you touch your tender. It was Joe Halacha, bothering everybody. Oh, you touch your shoes, you're Chayav Skila. You know, it was really, and he was driving everybody and himself crazy, absolutely crazy. And then one day, the coup de grace was he went out and he bought himself a frock. A long coat with two buttons. There he is, 60 years old, walking, you know, pacing the halls like this. The guys are laughing at me. You're a frummy, you're greasy. I'm giving him a real hard time. And then one day he was out in the hallway by the drinking fountain. He's bent over by the drinking fountain taking a drink. One of his friends passed by and saw an irresistible target that comes up behind him and zoop, sliced him. Right by the drinking fountain. Give him a good zinger. But it turned out it wasn't him, it was the Rosh Yeshiva. Yeah, that's bad. Yeah, he zanged the Rosh Yeshiva. Rosh Yeshiva kept his face in the water, said, Chaim, if anybody sees what you just did, you're going to be embarrassed. Get out of here as fast as you can. True story. Two people were in the yeshiva. Stop and think about the Rosh Yeshiva. What about his cover? He just got zanged. What about his cover? What about his dignity? What's his first concern? What about the other? He's going to be so embarrassed. I'm more concerned about him. He wronged me. It was shogeg. He wronged me. I'll overlook it. And by the way, it's not easy. If it was easy, then there wouldn't be that kind of schar. If it was easy, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't be maver and all the midos. It's a difficult mitzvah. Because it means, I'm not talking about, you know, when you're in school, Erev Yom Kippur, you know, you're walking around, Michael. You got to ask the people you really have to ask. Ask your parents. If you're married, ask your wife. Right? Ask your wife. Right? Ask your wife. And then run. Right? Ask your parents. Ask the people who you really hurt. Right? And then the people who've really hurt you turn around and say, you know, what's wrong? I forgive them, Leif Sholik. That's a Mavir Amidosov. Call a Mavir Amidosov, Mavirin Lo Kol Shov, Zohi Pesach Tikva, Nechbad Marek, Rosh Hashim Yom Zakas. If anybody wants, these booklets are here by Rabbi Kunstler.
Thank you so much to Rav Kaplan. Okay, the schedule for the rest of the morning is as follows. Right after this, we have you. Everyone's invited upstairs. There are refreshments waiting in the hallway for you. There are three sessions that you need to choose one of them. Okay, the topics, Rabbi Ackel's topic is Shabbat Shabbaton, the essence of Yom Kippur. Is that correct? Okay, that's going to take place in Rabbi David's classroom. Okay, Rabbi David's classroom is the computer room. Rabbi Stamen is talking about something else. apologize for the topic. No. He's going to be in Kita Aleph, otherwise known as Rabbi Zinkin's classroom, okay, all the way to the other far corner. And Rabbi Elmaleh is going to be giving the third topic, which is his topic is growth forever, not just during a Aser Yimei Tshuva. Okay, that's going to take place in Rabbi Reichman's classroom, which is the classroom next to the Sephardi Beit Midrash. Okay, the sessions will begin promptly at 10:35. Okay, so you have about a 10-minute break, 12-minute break, 10:35. Everyone make their way into the sessions.